Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHP. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Jake Gutierrez and our guest in studio, Stan Weber. I'm broadcasting live from the drum room inside the Hilton President Hotel in beautiful downtown Kansas City, Missouri. And, of course, the Hilton President Hotel, the official hotel of the Border Patrol. And later on, I'll be back on stage for the Miller Lite Fan Fest presented by Sports Radio 810 WHB. Nate Bucati, I wish you would tell everyone again the wonderful partners and sponsors that are making all of our coverage possible down here at the Big 12 Championship and, of course, our duties over at the Miller Lite Fan Fest presented by Sports Radio 810 WHP.
Well, of course, the first one, as you mentioned, Miller Lite. Make plans to join us every day for the Miller Lite Fan Fest at the KC Live at the Power and Light District Rally House. You can shop at 16 Metro Rally House locations and view the full March Madness collection at rallyhouse.com. Green Light Dispensary. Make sure to march into Green Light to see the new specials that they have. And Hollywood Casino. Reserve your seats now at the new sports book. Hollywood Casino.
Don't they have to? I don't know. They have to be thrilled with this.
Oh man!
Hollywood around. Hollywood Casino's got to be super happy. All right, Stan. Let's. I mentioned I'm down here still at the President Hotel, and I'll be back over at the Big 12 Championship later on tonight. And so K-State. Loses to Iowa State, and I was going to play, I think everyone should hear it, Jerome Tang was asked if his team should be in the NCAA tournament, and he gave a very long answer, so I want to play that and then just get your thoughts then about whether or not you think K-State deserves to be in the NCAA tournament. Jake, let's hear from Jerome Tang after last night's loss to Iowa State.
Coach Tang, do you believe that you guys have done enough to get a bid in the tournament?
Yeah, I thought last night when we won that game against Kansas, and I have several reasons why. You know, we have five quad one wins, all five of our quad one wins against the top 30 in the net. We have six wins against the top 40 in the net. The opponents that we played against in the non-conference and conference combined have the ninth best defense in the country and the 35th best offense in the country. So we didn't play a powder puff schedule. We have the number one strength of schedule of all the bubble teams right now. We have the number one strength of schedule of all of them. We're 1-0 against the SEC, and that was a true road game at LSU. We're 2-0 against the Big East, and we played Providence on a neutral court with Bryce Hopkins, their best team, and beat them, right? And so we played six power conference teams in the non-conference and an American team. So we didn't duck anybody in what we did. We won seven overtime games, and for some reason, that's being held against us in the net with the metrics, right? Because I was told a long time ago, just win the game, right? And because we didn't win by 30 or 40 against quad four teams, right? That's being held against us in the numbers, right? And what the net shows. What's not taken into account is that we were missing two guys who could have started for us. And we're trying to figure out who we were in November when those things happened. Only three of our losses are to non-NCAA tournament teams. And so that's another reason why I feel like we have nine wins in the number one league in the country. And so I'd said all along, nine wins in this league should get you in. And so last night when we won, I felt really good about that. And obviously I'm not the one making decisions. But we have the most quad one wins and the best quad one winning percentage of any bubble team except for Texas A&M. And they have four quad four losses, right? So we have no quad four losses. We have one quad three loss. And that was to Miami. And when we played Miami on a neutral site, they were ranked 15th in the country. They weren't the team that Miami is right now. Okay, and when we played USC on a neutral site, they were also top 20 in the country. We played the USC team that just beat Arizona. the other day. That's the USC team that we played, not the one that had injury problems and lost a bunch of games during the year. So, you know, when I look at it and I see our body of work and I think about our quad one wins, we have elite quad one wins. Three teams are ranked in the top 10 in the country when we beat them. We beat Kansas full strength. We beat them with Kevin McCullough and Hunter Dickinson. Right, and we beat Baylor, and we beat Iowa State. And so we have elite quad one wins. We have no bad losses. And so I felt last night when we won that game, that gave us our ninth Big 12 win, that we were in the tournament.
All right, so there is the case made by Jerome Tang. Stan, what do you think?
The case was unbelievable. Well done. It encourages me because we keep looking at Joe Lunardi or others and their projections, and K-State was more than eight teams away from being in the NCAA tournament under a week and a half ago's evaluation. And so where are we on this? I think he makes some great points. Let's get to his points real quick. Elite wins. Kansas won four times over top 10 teams this year. Now, this is not Kansas's best team, but a big part of their resume is the fact that they beat UConn, and they got four top 10 wins. Hardly anyone in the country is touching that record. Why do I bring that up? Because it goes into what's K-State's statement. Look at the Big 12 right now, and K-State follows Kansas. They have four. K-State has three top 10 wins, not just when those teams are ranked, but still today, everyone would say, oh, you beat Kansas, you beat Baylor, you beat Iowa State. How about this? The rest of the Big 12, Houston 1, Iowa State 2, Baylor 1, Texas Tech 1, BYU 1, Texas 1. That's how many wins they've got over top 10 teams. Oklahoma 0, Cincinnati 0. So his resume discussion is really well done. Now let's talk about the net. I don't understand the net. It's a new ranking system. It used to be the RPI, right?
Yeah.
So how much does the NCAA tournament committee rely on the net? Many people think that they rely on it a bunch. And what is happening? There is criticism from the ACC and some other conferences saying that the Big 12 gamed the system on the net because the Big 12's done a great job with their rankings in the net. Okay? There's one argument there. Well, where could that argument come from? Instead of being defensive and just going, oh, those babies, we know the Big 12 is the best, and we're in the middle of Big 12 country in the Big 12 tournament. We don't have to be defensive. Let's listen to what they're saying. What they're saying is the net did a good job of saying, we're going to look at not only if you win, but how much you win by. We're going to take in more metrics, but they cap it. They say if there's a win over 15 points, if you beat somebody by 30 in the non-con, we're going to act like it's no more than a 15-point win. We're not going to overvalue you blowing some average team out in non-con. Well done, right? But wait a second. They also take into account offensive efficiency and defensive efficiency. And I'm no expert on this, so if I'm wrong, I'll raise my hand and have anybody, you know, get a hold of me. But I believe it's not capped. So when you're dogging someone and you're 15 points up on them and you take it and you had a home game against an average team and you go ahead and beat them by 30 and score almost every time you get down the court when they're demoralized and they're dead and you go win the game and you stop them and suddenly you look like on your average you increase your offensive and defensive efficiency by blowing people out. Not on the scoreboard, but in the numbers. That's what the ACC is saying. The Big 12 didn't necessarily have every team playing great conference, non-conference opponents, but they were blowing them out and increasing their numbers. Okay, K-State did not get the advantage of that. They played close games. Now, I hear some hints that, for some reason, overtime games aren't just treated as final score. Look at it. There's something in there about overtime games. Maybe you say in the regulation they tied. You know, something like that. I don't know. But he makes a great point that K-State's net is awful. They are number 68, and they've moved up from basically being 70 to 75 for the last 4 weeks. Okay? So K-State's net does not have where you're flying your flag saying they should be in the NCAA tournament. But why is the net the ultimate reason that you're talking about? Because it's hard. There's so many teams on the bubble. because what, the 25th team and the 65th team or the 80th team in college basketball are all about the same? So I get you got to have metrics, well, but this formula has not been proven out. And right now, I think, I feel if a fair evaluation was done listening to Jerome Tang, I think K-State might be in the NCAA tournament. But everyone else says it's not true. I'm not going to get over-optimistic. But this net rating really does seem to be a burden on the shoulders of K-State.
So I think the reason that, it becomes so, becomes a crutch, they need crutches. The people in the selection committee to lean on. And the reason why is because we're talking about comparing apples to oranges. I'm looking at the ESPN. They updated their bracketology today. And I think maybe good news for K-State, if you care about what ESPN's bracketology says, is they are listed now as next four out, which before this tournament, they helped themselves in this Big 12 tournament.
Yeah, they were ninth or worst, and now they're, according to the same source.
Yeah, so they weren't even in the next four out going into this Big 12 tournament. Now they're at least in the next four out, which means they're still on the bubble. This isn't going to be 100% right. They're going to get some things wrong. But when you look at the other teams that are listed as teams that are first four and next four out, New Mexico, Indiana State, Providence, Pittsburgh, Wake Forest, Ohio State, and Villanova. Trying to compare Indiana State.
K-State beat two of those teams, Providence and Villanova.
So there you go. Trying to compare Indiana State to K-State, how do you do it? They can play completely different resumes, and so you look for numbers. It's like, okay, well, the eye test is one thing, but I'm going to have to stand there and answer questions to the media after I put this selection committee thing together, and if I show some numbers, well, the net says this. You know, it makes it easier to justify something that's impossible to truly compare because they don't have – they're not the same situations. So that's what makes it tough, I think, and that's why coaches. I mean, isn't it amazing to listen to Jerome Tang? That sounded like a well-versed lawyer stating a case. I mean, he knew every number and every single thing that he could use to state his case, which I think is impressive, and it's something that coaches actually have to do because he might have said something that somebody on the selection committee goes, you know what? Actually, if K-State, you know, it's. How are they really any different from these other teams that are in or out? It's almost impossible to say. That's the tough part about being on the bubble.
Well, the selection show will have the intrigue that we don't normally have. Now, if you're a Kansas fan, you know, usually there's no intrigue. You know you're going to be a number one seed, and the way they've done it the last 5 years or plus, you even know where you're going to go.
Yeah.
You used to be wondering, now it is who's the opponent in the second game, because you know you're going to win the first game, and what time of day is the game going to be? Right, is it going to be a Thursday or Friday game? Yeah. And what region are you? Usually, you know what region you're going to be in. There's not a lot of intrigue. And the other intrigue that K-State said in last year is just kind of minor. We knew we were going to be in the NCAA tournament. We had a big party, and we just waited for the selection show to tell, you know, where we're going to go, who we're going to play. It's a lot of fun. But for the teams that are really on the bubble, you're sitting on the edge of your seat, going, "I don't know," and everybody, even if it. If Joe Lunardi and ESPN reports that they're the last four in, that doesn't mean you're the last four in.
Right.
I mean, there are, what, I don't know, 10 to 15 teams sitting there wondering if they're going to get in or not, and K-State is right there. I think if with K-State beating Texas, it changed things. Beating Iowa State on the Saturday before changed things. If K-State would have won against Iowa State last night, I think most K-State fans I know would have go, we're in a tournament.
Yeah.
And I still would be nervous as heck today going, I don't know. Who knows what little movement made that difference? But right now, I think most people went home going, well, probably not in the NCAA tournament. But listening to Jerome Tang makes me say, I'm going to be sitting on the edge of my seat, and I will not be embarrassed if K-State's name pops up in the 68 teams at all. Because the narrative for the last month has made it seem like, how could K-State possibly, with a 68 net, and just be another team from a power conference riding that wave of we're the best conference and getting in and holding a team like Indiana State out. Shouldn't you feel bad? You know, those kind of things. After listening to Jerome Tang, I'm like, no. K-State deserves to be in a tournament. And if I find out Sunday night they're in a tournament and we're talking about the NCAA tournament next week, I will not be going, oh, God, we sure got lucky. It's no. K-State deserves to be in the NCAA tournament based on what I heard. I thought it was very well done. Like you said, like your dad, like a lawyer. Boom. I want to see. I haven't seen it live yet. Did he? Was he reading from something, or is this?
Didn't sound like it. I mean, he sounded like he was rattling that stuff off.
That's what I thought too.
Also, this in a way could help the case. You talk about bubble teams getting big wins. Congratulations to our friend Kim English last night. They had a gigantic win in the Big East quarterfinal over a top 10 team in Creighton. And Kim English, social media went wild last night for Kim English and his intensity on the bench as he got a technical earlier in the game, and he looked like he was ready to fight any official within 10 miles of him. But then, if you watch him, I mean, it almost looks like he's getting ready to go on the court and play. And I just retweeted a couple of clips from him last night. And then we're going to at some point have him on the show probably after the bracket comes out. But that was a team stand that K-State beat. And so that can't hurt for Providence to go out there and beat Creighton and show that they're a quality basketball team, right?
Great question. That is a great question because you're fighting Providence to get into the tournament. So I saw that score, and I go, that helps K-State's resume, but it helps Providence's resume. So,
well, hopefully Providence goes on and wins the conference tournament, and then that takes up the bid right
there.
This
is just splitting hairs and the numbers and the evaluations because there's so many teams that are stacked in on top of each other. That's a fact.
You know, one of the most compelling things I thought from hearing that case from Jerome Tang for K-State is – because the big thing that we were taught when we were going through some of the processes about the NCAA selection committee, and this was years ago, I got to go through one of those meetings. They just kept talking about it's who you played and who you beat. And he's talking about the big wins they've had and who they were when we beat them. Beating Kansas when they have Kevin McCullough and Hunter Dickinson is very different than what Cincinnati just did. Cincinnati beat a demoralized Kansas team that didn't have either of their two vastly most important players. Doesn't mean they don't deserve some credit for it, but I wonder how much does the selection committee really, because they got
how much time do they have to remember all these things? We know all these facts about our local teams,
right? Because they got to compare the resumes of however many hundred teams.
Exactly.
Can they really be able to say, well, Kansas, that they're comparing Cincinnati versus K-State? Well, they both beat Kansas, and if you're Jerome Tang, you're like, yeah, but we beat Kansas when they were Kansas. You know, and I don't know.
And the painful losses were K-State started the season out in Vegas against USC.
Yeah.
And USC had their stuff together more than K-State did. Because like you said, Quez Glover was expected to be an important part of running the point guard and playing the guard position for K-State. And he gets hurt in their exhibition game and doesn't play the whole season. Naquan Tomlin, their best player coming back, isn't going to play. And all that was pretty new news.
Yep.
In the first game of the year. So USC got after him. Now USC looks like a bad team. And then they went in their overseas tournament or in the islands, and they're playing against Nigel Pack in Miami, who just came off a Final Four season, and they were playing at a high level. And I don't know what happened to them, but now they don't seem like that big a deal, and it hurts K-State from a numbers perspective that, oh, that's not the Miami's not that great. Well, the confidence level they are playing with at the beginning of the year in Game 5 or whatever that was, they looked like last year's Miami. Nigel Pack was bombing threes, and they were playing with confidence. So those losses really hurt K-State. And in what they thought were great stability builders, they thought this was such a great decision to play USC in Miami, Florida, early in the year. And it ends up now being painful because you lost those two games, and they didn't perform throughout the season. So when they played them all, but everyone's got their story, to be fair.
Yeah.
There's very good stories for, like I said, at least 15 teams right there in the bubble.
And we'll find out, what else happens. Any more upsets, or as this thing continues to play out around the nation, a lot of teams will be sitting on the edge of their seats waiting to find out what their fate is on Selection Sunday. We have Stan Weber in studio. We'll take a break back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. Stephen St. John and Nate Buchady with Stan Weber in studio. All right, Stan. Who's going to win this Big 12 tournament?
You got to give Houston a lot of credit. They're the number one team in the country. They engulf you with their defense.
By the way, Stan, Stephen and I were watching this. You were there courtside. Have you ever seen anything like what we saw yesterday where TCU didn't score a point for the first 9.5 minutes of that game?
It was unbelievable because they were getting – they had almost like 30 offensive rebounds.
Right.
They were getting put back chances. I think at one point midway through the second half, we were looking at a stat monitor that's right in front of us. It was TCU 4 of 22 on layups, whatever the definition of layups was on the right. stat sheet. Houston comes out of nowhere. They block shots. But they play a brand of basketball that I don't know how it's going to portray when it gets to the second weekend and the NCAA tournament. I really don't know. Because the physicality that they play with is off the charts. They aren't playing basketball, but they don't make obvious fouls. It's not like they're slapping at your wrists, elbowing you underneath the basket. It's not that blatant or illegal. In fact, the games aren't called in Houston's favor. They're called very fairly. But the game immediately ramps up in the physicality, the bumpability, you know, the rebound hitting each other without grabbing anybody. Like my hip into your hip, why do you move 2 inches? And you don't in other games. You know what I'm saying? Like the physicality just ramps up, and then it goes away from basketball. Except for Houston, somehow can settle themselves and have the fine motor skills of shooting the ball. Now, they're not even great at that, but L.J. Cryer is. So he makes a big difference. Shedd's really grown up, and he's looking to score a little bit more. But basically, Houston shoots the basketball. I mean, they are physical on offense, too, setting ball screens and dribbling into you and bouncing off. But when the ball goes up, they don't shoot a high percentage, guys.
Right. But they go get it.
They go get it.
Yeah.
And then it's game on, and people are flying everywhere. And because they are going for the ball, oftentimes fouls aren't called as guys are bumping off of them and flying all directions. Then you go to the other end of the court, and now the same thing's happening at the other end. But the teams that they're playing almost forget how to shoot the basketball. They're so worried about everything else and the bumping. But credit, they have a system in place. They have a focus. They do block shots. They are athletic. They go get it. But I'm still not sitting here advancing them into the Final Four like I should. They won the Big 12 by 2 games. The Big 12, they're new to it. They beat Kansas by 5 games. They started conference 1-2, new to the conference, like what the heck. And all of a sudden, they only lost one more time. They got a great coach. They have an unbelievable reputation right now over the last 5 years. It's not new.
Yeah.
So I want to believe in Houston. Going back to the tournament, Stephen, I think I should believe in Houston and put them right in there with close to my decision. I haven't said what my decision is yet, but I would definitely talk about them. But the NCAA tournament, I just wonder, a team that knows how to shoot and move the ball. Remember when Kansas cut them up and shot almost 70% against them? It seems like that could happen because Houston can't match you on the offensive end. They really need you to fail on defense, and not every team in the country is going to have that happen. At the Big 12 tournament, I said going in before it started, I thought Iowa State would win. Before it started. So I guess I got to stick with that because they are going to have a home court advantage right now when you look at playing against Baylor and then either Houston or Texas Tech. So I think Houston will make the final, beat Texas Tech today. I have no problem with anybody who wants to bet Jake. I don't bet, but if you want to bet and you just said, how can you pick against Houston, I would say I wouldn't argue for 5 seconds. I mean, they should win this tournament. They're really good. I think they'll beat Texas Tech, and they have a great chance to win a tournament. But I said before it started, I thought things would set up well for Iowa State, and with the crowd that's going to be here, as good a basketball team
it's
as they are.
It's the Cyclone Invitational the rest of the way. I mean, it is going to be.
And they're really good, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, look, hey, Texas Tech's good. Baylor's good, but how electric would that crowd be in the atmosphere, whether you're there or we're watching on TV or over here at the Miller Lite Fan Fest? If it's Houston and Iowa State in the final, that'll be awesome.
Oh, it's good.
It's awesome basketball, right?
But on the flip side,
they played close games anyway. But how big advantage will it be that Iowa State's in a familiar place?
Yeah.
With everybody cheering
for them.
It's
going to be a home game. It's going to be a home game. I mean, it's we saw Stephen and I were talking last night. I mean, even before the K-State-Iowa State game, when we got up on stage in the Power and Light District, what would you say, Stephen? 80-20 Iowa State fans? Maybe more?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they come here in force. And if on the flip side, if Iowa State doesn't win today, I worry about what the crowd's going to look like for the Big 12 championship game. You know, it's not going to be great.
Tickets will be available.
And it's going to be a great game.
you know? An elite game if you have Baylor versus Houston.
It'll be a great game.
Two top 10 teams. And yeah, I hope Kansas City shows out because we want to say that we care about big time basketball.
Yeah.
But this weekend will be a prove it opportunity because KU is like a pro team around here. And there's that unbelievable interest. But we say, hey, we'll go to the NAIA tournament. We'll go to the regionals. You know, come to Kansas City. We'll go to the games because we care about basketball. Well, is it we care about KU, K-State, Missouri, and Iowa State? Is that our only care? I mean, seriously, if the number one team in the country, the Houston Cougars, are getting a chance to play on Saturday against Baylor.
Who Jared Sutton told us has the most NBA talent in the Big 12.
Yeah, they got some guys. They were a little rusty last night in the first half, and Cincinnati was getting after it. But, boy, they do have – I was sitting down there going, whoa. They got some skill and size, speed. They haven't played perfect basketball, but Baylor's a very good team. So, yeah, Kansas City needs to do a good job. I went into this tournament and the last couple of weeks talking about the region and saying this is the place for the Big 12 tournament. We get on our soapbox, but even objectively – this is absolutely the best place for the Big 12 tournament to be, okay? I'm not nervous at all about what happens with people being there or not, Nate, because great job by Kathy Nelson.
Oh, man.
Saw her, gave her a big hug because she's a friend and she's so nice and does such great work. But I said, awesome job, man. Kansas City through the 31 tournament. We've got that signed, sealed, and delivered. Yeah. So great job, Kansas City, all the volunteers, Kathy Nelson, everybody else. Big 12 being smart about what they're doing, what's best for the Big 12. All those things are in play. But, yeah, it is a little bit of a test. If Iowa State gets beat, people ought to buy those tickets. You really should.
I mean, you have a chance to watch an incredible basketball game, and the tickets might not be so expensive as they normally would be. I saw a lot of KU fans down there yesterday, and I was like, hey, are you going into the game? And they said, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to go into the game. I feel like I still want to watch some basketball, but I wonder how many people will still do that then 2 days later, you know, from the KU side of things, from the K-State side of things.
It could be new people. I know that I've been down there all week, and you guys know, Stephen, you're spending the night there right now, right? I mean, I was talking with some people from the Big 12 and go, people don't realize what a marathon this is. The excitement level around the region is awesome. The economic benefit. This is the coolest week in the Big 12, right, in Kansas City. But if you're down there literally every day working or doing whatever you're doing, no matter how much fun it is, it becomes a grind.
Oh, yeah. Especially now.
People are getting there
on Tuesday.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. People are getting there at 7 o'clock in the morning, getting to work, and leaving at 11 or 11:30 at night, and you say, isn't this great basketball? But sometimes your eyes are like, the ball and the noise just all sounds the same over and over. Does that make sense? And so you get a little worn down.
Yeah. It's a lot
by
of basketball
Friday night
now.
Or Saturday, unless like your team's in it.
Yeah.
So if it's KU, K-State, Iowa State, whoever it is, yeah, your energy level is high. But for the loyalists who go, I can't wait for the tournament. And I know a bunch of people I've been seeing down at the tournament. They've been there hour after hour after hour, starting on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And so you could run out of energy. But, Nate, they're not the only people who can go to a game.
Right.
We're talking to the others.
Yeah.
Who haven't watched 20 hours of basketball in T-Mobile. How about if you love basketball and sports and you look at your Saturday calendar and you go, I can go watch Houston play Baylor? If that's the matchup in the finals,
yeah,
you need to be going to the game and enjoying the heck out of it. You don't have to say, oh, I had tickets on Wednesday. No, just go for your first game all week. We ought to have enough fans in this area that appreciate big-time sports to be there.
All right, let's get back to today's top story. Last night, maybe you already went to bed. Maybe you were getting ready to go to bed like Jake. But we find out last night that the Chiefs sign wide receiver Hollywood Brown, free agent wide receiver Hollywood Brown, to a one-year deal for $7 million with incentives that could take it up to $11 million. And it was the timing of it was interesting because just before Hollywood Brown it's announced that he signs with the Chiefs, it was reported that the Chicago Bears were trading a fourth-round pick to the Chargers for Keenan Allen. And so apparently they tried to get Keenan Allen to take a pay cut, and he said no. And so then they traded him for a fourth-round pick. And look, they were not going to trade into the Chiefs. And so if you're a Chiefs fan, don't get mad. Why didn't the Chiefs give a third-round pick? They weren't trading him to the Chiefs. Okay, so they trade him out of the conference. They traded him to the Chicago Bears. I'm just curious. We've talked quite a bit about Hollywood Brown and what you thought, Stan, and you can reiterate some of those comments. But what did you think of Keenan Allen getting shipped to the Chicago Bears for a fourth-round pick?
Welcome to the NFL and most organizations, right? The Bears sign a guy who's 32 years old and give up a fourth-round pick, and they're just – is this going to end up well? I mean, he gets hurt all the time already, right? But then you compare all these moves, and it's been fun to watch them this week, right, Stephen? I mean, this free agency frenzy has been amazing. But the more you see it, the more you realize how awesome it is the Chiefs organization runs things the way they do. I mean, the moves they make so much sense. And most of these other moves, you're like, really? I mean, is that like Ravens get Henry? You know, oh, this is going to – well, if you go watch him play, do you know how many 2-yard runs and 3-yard runs he has where he doesn't get his momentum going and he just gets stopped? He's not dominating the NFL. You can go look at his highlights and go, oh, my gosh, look what the Ravens have done. But the Chiefs just make good decisions. And here, unbelievably, they get a legitimate wide receiver who's a veteran, performed and put numbers together, comes from Arizona and signs a 1-year contract for $7 million with incentives to go to 11 to play with the Kansas City Chiefs. We talk about, hey, do you have a hometown discount with Chris Jones or Legarius Sneed or Travis Kelce? Will they play for less to be a Chief? Well, we know one guy who will, Hollywood Brown, because you look at the rest of the marketplace. He had a choice as a free agent. He chose to come here. The Chiefs are doing everything right. But I'll go back to the other thing that maybe you didn't hear me say earlier. Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs setting up that contract the way they did to have him be a long-term committed player to the Kansas City Chiefs, and the flexibility that his contract allowed, gave us $22 more million in salary cap. The big story is what Patrick Mahomes did this week to open cap space. Chris Jones, giant story. Hollywood Brown, giant story, but it's not over. Is there going to be a next giant story of Legarius Sneed being a Chief next year? And the Chiefs have that option now. They can just say, we're franchise tagging you. You're going to be a Chief. We can trade, possibly, if it makes sense. We can sign a long-term contract, if it makes sense. Or what? The Chiefs control his playing rights. The Chiefs can just say, we got room under the salary cap. Thank you, Patrick Mahomes. Thank you, Chris Jones. Thank you, excellence in the top of the organization all the way down. The Chiefs are hitting it, man. I said at the end of this season, I thought the Chiefs would be better in 2024 than they were in 2023. This move last night, Stephen, moves it a little bit more in that direction, in my opinion.
That's Stan Weber. We'll take a break back after this on WHP. Welcome back to the show.
A crazy person could be walking in there. And I know at least they have security. But
yeah. Congratulated me for an incredibly quick run through the buffet line here at the Delicious Walnut Room inside the President Hotel, where they have just a wonderful breakfast buffet, tremendous speed, worthy of the NFL Combine. And then I sent a picture, Jake, to you of what I got.
Get some protein in, baby.
I did good, didn't I?
Yeah.
Very
well
good.
Done. Get those eggs in. Eggs are great.
Thank you. I did tremendous work in just a few minutes. Very proud of myself.
Protein's very important, Stephen.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, Stan Weber is in studio for a few more minutes. And we've touched on this a couple of times, but I'd like to know what your preference would be, because the Chiefs have a choice here. they can keep L'Jarius Sneed and just have him play on that franchise tag and be ready to go and take a run at a three-peat, or they could be very selective and wait for a good deal, and if they get that good deal, like, say, a high second-round pick or something like that, they can pull the trigger, create more, even more salary cap space, and add draft capital. If you had your choice, which path would you like to see the Chiefs take?
The good news is I would definitely say whatever the Chiefs' evaluation is and move is what I believe in. That doesn't answer your question, but my confidence level is 100%.
I'm with you.
That
yeah.
I have – this is – darn it, we lost L'Jarius Sneed and – salary cap, everybody has to live with it, and being so successful, you can't pay everybody. And I could go down that path and sing that song, but I don't believe it in my heart. It's like, I love the way that guy plays. He is a Swiss Army knife for Steve Spagnuolo, okay? The fact that we have two or three more of those now make it seem like, well, he can move on. But if they think in the future, in the next 3 or 4 years, that it would be better to make this trade, this move, I am completely comfortable with it, but I can't not say I'd like – I have to go with I'd like to see L'Jarius Sneed be a Chief. And I'm not worried about the acrimony that might occur that he doesn't want to play under a franchise tag. Many franchise tag players are mad that that is in the collective bargaining agreement. Only one player per team is stuck with a one-year guaranteed contract at a high price. They don't want that. They want more security. Because if they get a longer-term contract, they know where they're going to be, where they're going to live, and the amount of big money they're going to get. Plus, they get a giant bonus. So they get a bunch of money today. So they don't want to be a franchise tag player. Some teams have to live with a guy who's not happy in the locker room, and that's a cancer. I don't think that's a problem with the Chiefs. I think L'Jarius Sneed, what I've heard him do and what he said, I'm not worried about him at all not balling out, as they say. So if he's happy and plays his butt off for the Chiefs, then who cares if he's on a franchise tag? And Chris Jones set the tone. When a team and a player don't agree exactly on 1 year, what does that have to do with your long-term probabilities with that team? L'Jarius Sneed could say, I'm the new Chris Jones. I'll play under the franchise tag this year, and we'll do something next year. So I think, yeah, if you made me pick, Steven, L'Jarius Sneed staying as a Kansas City Chief would be my first choice.
That is Stan Weber. Stan, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week. Back after this on WHP.